I'm Atticus. This is Say It's Late, and I have my lovely guests here.
Hi.
You want to introduce yourself and tell us what you do?
Yes, I'm Kevin Kassir, and I'm a gay life coach.
Yeah. I love to always let other people introduce themselves, because Kassir, I feel like I would mess it up.
I mean, even if you do, they would hear me say it correctly.
So. Yeah, they're like, we love to see Atticus get corrected all the time.
It's our you could say it wrong, and I'll correct you, and then they could get what they want.
Or I could just change the way that your name is pronounced.
Yeah.
Forever. Well, that's great. So, yeah, I was really excited to connect with you, as we were saying before we started this conversation, is that, you know, that I've been working a lot with, like, OnlyFans creators and, like, RuPaul people as well, content creators, more or less, and I'm kind of curious on, like, what kind of things that you would see on your side of doing, you know, so life coaching, what these type of people might endure, and how that, you know, maybe some of our audience members might have the same problems.
Mm-hmm. So, as a gay life coach, not only am I gay, but I cater to gay men, and there's a whole variety. I feel like relationships are a big thing, whether it's platonic or romantic relationships, but there's a bunch of other things like imposter syndrome or external validation, social media, and the search for validation on there. It really a whole range. Every client I have is very different, but those, especially the relationships, are definitely the number one. I've had clients either get relationships or break up from relationships. Mm-hmm. That seems to be a big one for people.
Let's dive into that one a little bit on relationships. What's like the nastiest relationships, the situations that you're dealing with, and how do you help them through that?
Well, you know, of course there's confidentiality, so I won't be telling a specific thing, but some people might be dealing with wanting a relationship, and maybe they've constantly been rejected, or maybe they've had toxic relationships before. And then we would talk about how could they get out of that mentality that everything will continue that pattern. Or maybe they've been in a relationship for many, many years, and the only time they talk about it is in a negative way. Then we'll say, like, oh, what keeps you there? Why? How does this relationship serve you? Things like that.
How do you help them identify, like, if the person's truly toxic or if they're the toxic in their relationship?
Yeah. So sometimes I would say something like, okay, it sounds like you're saying a lot of the things your partner is doing are toxic. What are things you might do that either mirror their actions or that lead to them doing that? Because if you're in a relationship together, you probably have some things in common. You know, I wouldn't date someone that's very toxic, because very quickly I would end it.
Yeah.
And if I were to be in a relationship with someone that's toxic, I probably contribute to that. I might also say something like, what would a third party say? If a third party was watching you, try to be objective and think, what would this person describe your actions as and that person's actions as?
Yeah, that's also really helpful. Have that third party in the room.
Yeah. Journaling is very common. So I might have them, like, journal it and say, I imagine this person would say this. They might look at me and be turned off by my facial expressions, things like that.
I've seen journaling go both positive and negative. You know, as some, you could see them getting past some, like, some stages in their relationships where they might start to recover, and then they look back into the journal, and then it all just comes right back down, and the other partner's kind of defenseless. Like, do you ever encounter that?
You mean when they journal and then they break up and look back on it?
Well, no, they journal and they, like, say that they're starting to make they're recovering from things, they're doing better, and then that person decides to, like, read back on where they were, and rather than reflect on it and be like, we're doing really good now, they bring all that back to that partner that's tried to, like, you know, get through that situation with them.
I guess I haven't experienced that specifically with my clients. I could see that happening, but usually journaling seems to be something that kind of gives them a breakthrough. And I think most of the time when they journal, they don't probably look back on it too much. They kind of get it out there, and then...
Has a partner ever found someone's journal?
No. It's usually, like, on a Google Drive.
Okay.
So it's not like they have a written journal, and they're searching through their underwear drawer, and they find it. No, I hate writing. I hate writing with my hand. So it's just a Google Drive, and that way, if they want to share it with me too, I could see it. And then I could read, like, oh, this is, like, your new idea of your self-image, or this is your new idea of your relationship. So,
I'm not making these all up as I go. This has really actually happened. I think in people's lives that I've met, or you know, somebody was watching their house for their partner, like a new relationship, and they found their journal, mm-hmm. and it's a little chaotic.
Yeah, you know? No, I.
But I, like, I look at you in such a positive light now.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't tell them to do mm-hmm. a physical journal yeah. just because first off they'd have to buy it, and everything's online. I mean, my yeah. I work with people online. I work with them on Zoom. Mm-hmm. I post a lot on social media, so. The internet and technology is a way of the future, and journaling online, it's easy. So
yeah.
no, they would never have to go through that secret diary being found and yeah. realizing their partner hates them has been wanting to get a divorce for a few years.
Yeah. Maybe help accelerate things for in a positive way. Then you could get down to the real coaching.
It'll fast forward to the end, even if it's not the most ideal positive way.
Yeah. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay. So relationships, what's maybe one of your favorite, you know, services or things to work on with somebody?
When it comes to in general, the thing that I think is really important is gay friends, mm-hmm. like platonic gay friends. I think, especially in LA, you know, I'm in Hollywood, West Hollywood. It's so easy to hook up with a guy or date a guy and then try to be his friend.
Right.
And then in a circle of friends, everyone's like, oh, I fucked this guy. You know, this guy and I were trying to do something. Me and this guy had a threesome. We're trying to have a foursome. All that.
Right.
And I talk a lot about the importance of platonic gay friends, because even if hooking up seems to be the norm, my life is so much easier.
Right.
Because I haven't crossed that boundary with my friends, no matter how hot they are, no matter what time we get home, whether it's mm-hmm. 6 a.m. or 10 a.m., no matter what we're on.
Yeah.
I like to keep it that way.
Do you feel like it's fair for you to speak to that if you haven't like been on both sides?
Well, I have, of course, with mm-hmm. some friends, you know, treaded the line or crossed it.
Right.
And I'm not really friends with them anymore.
Gotcha.
So I have done that. But mm-hmm. my longstanding, sustainable, deeper friendships, we haven't crossed that mm-hmm. line. And I'm sure plenty of people I know, they're really close friends with people they're exes with or they've hooked up with. That's totally fine.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of overthinking that I don't have to do because right. I have never crossed that boundary.
Yeah. How do you recommend someone being friends with someone that they did have some type of hookup with, but they want to remain friends?
I think just being clear in what they want. Like, do they want to one day on a drunken night out at 2 a.m. have it happen again?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Do they want it to never happen again? Do they want to make sure if one of them is making out with another guy, no one gets jealous? If one of them takes a guy home to hook up, it doesn't mean a threesome is invited.
Right.
Being very clear of what you want. And in that case, you could be open and you could say, I'm open to whatever happens, whatever we're feeling in the night. But that openness could lead to miscommunication, misunderstanding. So in the end,
yeah.
you might be closing some doors on yourself, but... Yeah. In my experience, I have a lot less overthinking because I define things very clearly.
Yeah, it sounds like a relationship for sure. And then on top of that, I think we all have that best friend that you go out with and everyone thinks you're dating and yeah. they're like a straight cock block, right?
Yeah. So yeah, my best friend Ricardo, I post him a lot on my stories and I always make sure to mm-hmm. say like a sticker that says friends, just friends, make friends mm-hmm. for that reason specifically. He's not a cockblock in himself because he doesn't try to be. And usually I think people could tell we're playful and not,
right?
Yeah, like dating.
So so is there anything that you could do to like help like reinforce to your friend that you just want to be friends? Like my personal coach has told me to start conversations with like when you text them like, hi, friend, and then start my sentence. And that's been really successful. Like, is there anything on your side that you would recommend?
You mean to make sure the friendship stays platonic?
To reinforce it as a friendship only. Like, because you can tell like they want more than that. Mm-hmm. And I keep reinforcing it. I'm like, hey, friend, what's going on? What are we doing later, friend? You know, yeah. like throwing that word in there. Like, this is where you are.
Yeah.
You know?
I think having a good conversation at the start mm-hmm. to be clear of like, I'm only looking to be platonic friends. I don't want to hook up. I don't want to date. But of course, some people might think you're just saying that. Mm-hmm. So reinforcing is good. You could say, hi, friend. You could talk about other guys you're into to that person. You could talk about like, oh my God, you're such a close friend to me. I'm so happy with our relationship and how it is. Just reinforcing that you are happy with how things are in the moment. And hopefully that will show them. Like people, You never like when your crush calls you sister or friend or best friend. So using those words are good.
Just to break them down, yeah.
Yeah.
ruin their confidence. That's.
But, I mean, if their confidence is rooted in hoping you're going to date, they need to find other things that make them confident.
Absolutely. That's a good point. That's a good point. Okay, so going back into it, so you said that's like one of your, you know, favorite things that you're connected to. Like, is there like a success example that you can give us on like something that it's like the relief that it gave to somebody that you work with?
Of keeping the platonic friends?
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of my clients, he hooks up a lot, very frequently. And there was a guy he used to hook up with and he wanted it to end because my client actually started to get into a relationship and it was going to be monogamous. So he started to tell him beforehand, like, hey, I'm starting to date this other guy. I don't want anything to happen. And he could tell the other guy was still hoping for more. Like, he was inviting him over. He was saying, oh, you could still sleep in my bed. And my client was being like, oh, I'll sleep on the couch.
Yeah.
I'll still come over. I'll still hang out. We'll still get lunch. But I'm going to get a boyfriend, man, where I'm sleeping on the couch. Nothing's going to happen. Even though I used to fuck you hardcore, that's not going to happen anymore.
Right.
And then actually they did hang out like once or twice.
Mm-hmm.
Then that old friend of his decided to stop responding to him.
Yeah.
But that shows the friendship wasn't really rooted in a mutual connection. It was rooted in that guy wanting to get filled up.
Yeah. Do you ever feel like there's a chance that they'd come back around after they've gone over the heartbreak?
Mm-hmm. I definitely think so. I think some people, a lot of things can really bruise their ego. And they might take that as an ego attack.
Mm-hmm.
They might take it as, this person doesn't like me. They don't think I'm attractive. They don't think I'm a good sexual partner.
Right.
But some people might over time have that clarity to be like, no, you know what? He's being honest and he's dating someone else. It doesn't mean that I'm ugly. I'm not enough. And they might come around.
So here was where the tables turn, right? So that person, like with this situation, they're taking their time away. Right. And then maybe they come back later on. But your clients can be like, you know what, you left, you're out of my life. You know, like, how do you help them get over that hump that person deserved that time to recover?
How do I tell my client they should let that person back in?
Yeah. Because, like, they didn't leave just because they wanted to.
You know? Well, it's their decision.
Yeah.
I wouldn't tell the client, you need to let that person back in your life.
Yeah.
Because it's whatever they want. You know, I have cut off some friends before, and some I've let back in my life, some I decided my life is much better without them.
Right.
And if that client tells me they don't want the person in their life, I would say, do what you do.
Yeah.
If they say they do want to let them back in their life, they need to get over some resentment, then I would just say, once again, have a conversation, tell them how you felt, tell them what anxiety you have of how this previous interaction might affect your future relationship. And then stuff like that.
Yeah. Very situational, for sure.
Yeah. But I'm guessing if they don't want to be friends with them,
I just see a lot of it in the gay community where they do take that time away and they do try to heal because they really had their hopes up. They're like, I'm going to get with them. I'm their best friend. Like, I'm their last choice now, right? Mm-hmm. You know? And it just doesn't work out that way. And then they kind of disappear and they come back. And then I guess it really is dependent on the situation. But I, as an outsider, I'm like, this person's heart was broken, and also you led them on, you know? So I was like, you could have a friendship, but it's up to you to have that.
Yeah, I guess if a friend thinks another friend led them on, I would be like, well, how did they lead you on? You know, I personally have been rejected a lot, and I have gone for some guys who told me, oh, I didn't think you were interested in me. I thought you were just wanting to be my friend. And I've also been on the other side when a guy has told me he's secretly been in love with me and I was like, what the heck are you talking about? I thought when we like watch movies late at night on bed, we were just sisters.
I called you sister.
Like, I would talk about other guys I'm into to you. So I do think this idea of leading someone on, unless they're being clear that like they said they might want a date and then they never did, that's leading someone on. But if someone's hooking up with you every other week and then they stop talking to you when they date someone else, that's not leading you on. They just were using you to hook up and you were hoping for more and you never defined it. And that's what communication is for. That's why we have mouths and why we have vocal cords and a brain.
Well, I still think that's a little leading on. Maybe it's not like it's not nice, you know, like they went and found a relationship. That's unfortunate, you know. But I kind of like side with the person that's like, wait a second, you know, things weren't defined. They didn't have that conversation, so that sucks.
Yeah, we can't read each other's minds.
Yeah.
So no matter how direct you think you are, or no matter how clear you think you are in wanting to date, asking someone to hang out one-on-one to me might seem like I want to date, but to the other person might just be, oh, they just want to hang out. They're lonely. They want to hang out.
So that's actually a really good one. You're at my fixture shirt too.
Oh, thanks.
There you go.
I didn't even see.
I gotta clean you up a little bit. No, there you go.
It's
a very cute shirt.
It's my bad posture.
I feel like I'm like blending into the background here. I forgot that it's just not hot enough in here to wear the jacket.
You need to wear a gayer shirt.
I'm dom top.
You can be a dom top.
Yeah,
and
right.
Be gay.
You're you can be gay, be dom.
Yeah.
Top. Yep. Perfect. What did you say? Oh, I lost my train of thought thinking about these flowers.
Thinking about being a dom top.
Being a dom top. what is it? Okay. Damn, it's right out of my mind. Okay, so we know that you love your services helping people find out how they can be friends with people without not sleeping with them. That's really new. Okay, now I have my plot back. It is, I personally have a hard time trying to invite one person out, right? And I think of like, how is this going to be misunderstood? Or how do I mix them with other people, you know, so that it can be like a cool situation? Is that anything that you've helped people with?
Introducing a new person into their life. Yeah, that's something I talk about quite a lot on my social media, is making new gay friends. And one of the things I do talk about is go on errand dates with friends. You could go get groceries with them. You could do laundry with them. You could shop for gifts with them. You could, if you feel comfortable with it, invite a new guest into your group of friends. Of course, you know, that could be a little risky because what if this person is a mess?
Yeah.
But that's up to you if you want to allow the possibility for that. I think that is a really great way. If you think someone's really cool and you want them to be a bigger part of your life, inviting them to your group of friends is really great.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's new people that always want into the group really quickly. You know, they're like, what's that group chat? What's that? I want to go to this group thing. Like, do you support people not allowing like new people into their groups that quickly?
You know, I do think I'm pretty selective with who I let into my life. And I think if someone's making new friends, they might get excited and they might want to let people in right away. And that's fine. I don't think you necessarily have to hold yourself back. But if you do have an established group of friends, you're not really desperate for it, then yeah, you could throw a wrench in the mix by adding someone new in there. But you'll just have to play it case by case. You'll be able to decide based on your interactions with that person, try to hang out with them more one-on-one a few times before with the group. And you could also think like, what harm could they really make? If they hook up with everyone in your friend group, is that going to ruin things? Maybe not. If they are drama and a mess, and if you have to hold their hair back when they're throwing up, and if they bring, I don't know, random substances with them all the time and they go off the deep end, hopefully you're able to figure that out before you introduce them to your friends.
This
but
is
if
new.
Not, yeah,
new
if behavior. Not, you'll just have to slowly weed that person off.
I feel like I'm very slow to bring people into a group, particularly because I feel like they carry my name, you know, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to get invited to like these different engagements if you have someone that has like a name or whatever, but I'm also very known. So when people go to a party and stuff, they're like, who do you know here? They're like, oh, Maticus. And I'm like, don't you fucking
Don't associate with me.
Don't you ever. I don't know you like that. You know, like, so I guess I support both sides. So, you know, some people will come in if I call your friends, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. Like, there are some people I truly don't want to be associated with. Like, I think people, like, assume things based on who you hang out with. And there are people I've hung out with before that I'm like, okay, I don't want them ever saying my name again.
Yeah.
I don't want people to be like, oh, Kevin's friends with that person. That person who is kind of a creep. That person who is messy and breaks furniture. Like, but the more I distance myself from them, even if that person says my name, people will know like, oh, but I've never seen them talking. Maybe this person's just throwing out a popular name.
Yeah. Kevin, you're triggering me.
I'm talking about you.
If you're triggering me, I'm like, I'm getting every
time. So if anyone ever says me and Maticus are friends, just know. No, actually, I would hang out with you.
Yeah. Well, one of us would. No, I'm just kidding. No, you're great. You're
it's
great.
So, it's actually
so far, so great. You know, only because you're matching my mic. You know?
Yeah.
So we're talking about, you know, large friendships, large groups here. How and you said, like, sometimes you don't want to be seen around people. You don't want them to, you know, your name to be said. How do you set boundaries? Or how would you recommend setting boundaries with your large group of friends?
Yeah. So that's an interesting question, because with large groups of friends, I feel like there's usually the ones you're closer with, mm-hmm. and then kind of the more fringe people. So you could just keep focusing on the people you really enjoy. You could also, if you really want to be kind of cut and dry, which this is actually what I'm doing right now in my life, I have told the close friends in my big group, like, hey, I really enjoy you. I'm going to start distancing myself from the other people.
Yeah.
So when my close friend might have like a big group hangout, I'll say, just so you know, I'm going to start saying no. Mm-hmm. And I don't want you to like change plans because of me. I don't want any of that. But I just want you to know I'm not rejecting you. I'm rejecting the other people. And if the other people walk around when we're at a bar and they run into us, I'm going to walk away. I'm going to talk to strangers. I'm going to go to the bathroom. I'm going to mingle. And I'm not going to try to pretend that I care about this boring person or that I care mm-hmm. about this person who is a sexual creep. And people yeah. have said, I feel uncomfortable around this mm-hmm. person. I've had to turn down plans.
Yeah.
I've had to, thankfully, I don't deal with FOMO that much, mm-hmm. but I've had to turn down
That's
plans.
Lucky.
Yeah. I've had to turn down plans that sound cool.
Yeah.
But I'm like, you know what? I want to be very cut and dry with dissociating myself from
yeah.
certain people that I used to be close with.
Yeah. It could almost be guilty by association if you're with that person, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because people might see me, they might hear the things I talk about, mm-hmm. they might see my like very open behavior, and they might assume from point A to point Z about me based on the person I'm around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Wow, well, a lot of friendship stuff. So if you guys yeah. need friendship help, definitely check Kevin out. It seems like he's got the stats here.
Yeah.
We'll put yourself at the bottom, but we're going to move on to our next subject, which we're talking about is somewhat, we use a little bit different terminology, but imposter syndrome is something that I'm super interested in. I know that a lot of people in LA deal with it. And I also hear people talk about, if you think that you are suffering from imposter syndrome, you're a badass bitch. Because if you feel it, that means that you're up here, okay? So that's
exactly.
the first step. But the second part is, like, we want to talk about how to get through it. And I'd love to you know, see or hear your thoughts on imposter syndrome, what people might be dealing with out here in LA, and how you're helping them through those situations.
Yeah. So whatever the imposter syndrome is from, whether it is a job, whether it is your social status, whether it is, I don't know, a new business you're having, I would say just start saying you are that. Don't say, like for me, when I started working out a few years ago, I was just telling people as a joke that I'm a bodybuilder. And clearly I'm not, but I was saying it as a joke. And then the more I kind of said it, not I'm trying to work out, I'm trying to get fit, I'm trying to bulk up, I would just say, yeah, I'm a bodybuilder. And then the more I said it as a joke, the more it just kind of rolled off the tongue. And same with when I started my life coaching business. I didn't say, I'm trying to be a life coach. I'm thinking about life coaching. I would just flat out say, I'm a life coach. And at the time, back then, I was also a third grade teacher. But I was just, that's not what I wanted to be. So I just said, I'm a life coach. When I was out at the bar, didn't have any clients, didn't do anything yet, I just said that. And, you know, you could do that with anything. Maybe you want to be, I don't know, a kind person, and you feel like you're an imposter because you feel like you're not kind. You could just say, I'm a kind person. Maybe you feel like you're not funny, but you want to be funny. Just start saying, I'm funny. Look in the mirror and say, I'm funny. Or look in the mirror and say, you're funny. And then over time, you're going to fool yourself into thinking you are that, and you're going to forget the doubt that you had. So how I would deal with imposter syndrome is, even if you don't believe it, just say you are the thing that you want to be. And then you'll eventually start to believe it before you even realize it.
Yeah, because we're just little computers, right?
We're getting programmed yeah. by the things we say and the things we hear, and then especially the things we tell ourselves.
Mm-hmm. No, I definitely believe in that. As like, what is it? You say something repetition, or was it 23 times or something? You know, get really stuck with you. But I feel like even for me, you know, like you're talking about like going to the gym, like I could say, yeah, I go to the gym, and like, I don't go to the gym, you know? I'm like, that's fine. And people were like, oh, yeah, you're going to go. I was like, I'm going to start later. Or I'm going. Like, but it got to the point of, like, telling yourself, like, okay, you're athletic, you're going to the gym, but, like, but now, like, how do you get yourself to go?
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you keep saying, I go to the gym, I work out, I wonder how long it would be for you to not work out before you start to be like, you know what, my actions are not matching my words. Mm-hmm. Now I feel like I need to go to the gym. So my advice would still be, say you work out. If I don't work out for 2 weeks, that doesn't mean I don't work out. I don't go to the gym. It just means for 2 weeks I haven't. So mm-hmm. I still say, yeah, I work out. I do this stuff. And then after a certain amount of time, I think to myself, you know what? If I'm saying this about myself, I used to work out very consistently. I'm not as much anymore. Let's get back into what I've done. So
yeah,
eventually the actions will follow. Either the actions or the words will follow, but one of them has to change. If you don't work out and you don't say you work out, it's going to be really hard to get one of those gears moving.
Yeah, no, I think it's there. I think it's more of like people are like, you must work out. I'm like, yeah, sure, you know? Or I'm like, yeah, I'm going to start soon rather than like what you're saying. But I do feel like what you're saying, like I'm not matching what is being said. But I'm not necessarily like, oh, I do work out, you know?
Yeah.
That would be wrong.
It doesn't have to be a personality trait.
It almost be like, you know, if I don't do this, I'm a liar. Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that. Yeah. That makes sense. Okay. So back to other things with imposter syndrome, we were kind of talking about, you know, the Hollywood Hills of the sewer people. No, just kidding. I don't know if you guys know about that. It's a little scary. But
I've never heard of that.
It's a whole world down there. And there's a lot going on, but up above Beverly Hills and stuff. So people that are getting, you know, plastic surgery and treatments and you know, moved to LA and completely different, you know, there's a lot of people in the news right now. I don't really want to drop names because I'm not trying to get canceled again. But yeah. How do you help people through those things where like they feel like they'll never meet that perfection or they'll never be who they want to be?
Yeah. Well, it is a thing where there is this endless supply of external validation, especially with social media nowadays. It seems like there is no limit to it. There is no peak to it. So my advice would be figure out what you really care about. Do you really care about people complimenting your abs? Do you really, really care about people saying that you're the best looking guy in the room? If that is what is your life's purpose, lean into that. Keep spending hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of dollars on the way you look. So be it. But think to yourself, we all like compliments on the way we look. What is something you care about most about yourself? Is it your humor? Is it your intellect? Is it your friendships? Is it your business and your accolades? For me, it's personally, I really like when people feel like I'm genuine and I'm authentic and I'm open. So when someone compliments me on my looks, it's water off a duck's back. I have no deficit in feeling like I'm good looking. But when someone compliments me on saying that you're so genuine, I have told you something I've never told anyone else before, that lights me up so much more than someone saying they can't wait to take me home.
Mm-hmm.
So if you feel like you're just in this spiral of validation and searching for it,
mm-hmm.
really sit down and think, even journal, you could write it out.
Right.
Write out what kind of compliments light you up the most. And I would imagine there is a compliment that isn't physical that lights you up more than saying someone wants to take you home.
Yeah.
And once you figure that out, the thing you care about most, lean into it more. If it's your humor, start Googling how to be funny. Just lean into it more. When you're out, talk more about funny things rather than how much you go to the gym or work out. And
so let's be like, I love those that response, but let's be like a little more realistic, right? So if I feel like if people are dealing with these challenges, they should probably be working with someone, you know, like yourself.
Yeah.
Maybe, right? So like what kind of like things would you recommend? Like, do you have services for that? Or we recommend that they work with someone else or like therapy or like, mm-hmm. how can they, you know, like, cause that's a lot to put on somebody, you know, like just go find these things, you know?
It definitely is. You know, I always want, I post every day online so people can see, but of course, if someone wants to work with me one-on-one, they can. Mm-hmm. And it does have a cost, so my videos are free, but working with me one-on-one, some people might not be able to afford it. But if someone could, then yes, a life coach would be great to make a game plan for your life. Therapy is good for healing the past and healing trauma. Therapy is good for that. Life coaching is good for taking steps forward. If you feel like you're constantly worried about the past or things that your family have done to you, start with a therapist. But if you feel like you just don't know where to go next, then a life coach would be good because we could be like, okay, you want to feel good about yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Here is the next step in front of you. Don't think of 10 miles in front of you.
Yeah.
Think of the next 1 foot step. And yeah. With my clients, that is something I talk about is I would say, okay, you're focused on social media. You're focused on getting the most likes, getting the most DMs. Let's think about what is the thing that you care about most.
Yeah.
Go journal at home. Yeah. What is the thing that when someone compliments you or when someone comes to you about this, you think like, wow, that makes me feel really unique and special and different. It makes me happy to be alive.
Yeah. No, that's great. I think I say a lot of these things because I personally, you know, I felt it. I'm not sure if you have, you know, like kind of it's like what got you down your path. But for me, when I started my journey, is like I was doing, you know, trauma therapy, life coach, and I had a business mentor. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if you can afford it, you know, so it's like, it's easy for people to like, these are the things you need to do. And I was like, sometimes you need a lot of help sometimes to get you there.
Yeah.
And it might feel very overwhelming. For me, it was very overwhelming. And it so can be.
Yeah.
But I was like, it's really cool to have some people to be able to just like remind you that those outside perspectives, that the world's not so chaotic as you might think it was.
Yeah. I mean, it's the reason I'm a life coach. And I feel like naturally, I just share it out. But maybe I should just plug my services a little more. But it really is a thing where it's hard to be stuck in our own perspective. And working with a life coach or a therapist or some outside perspective, even just that in itself could really change the way you approach things and think about things. And if you don't even know how to tackle it, that's what we're here for.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the reason I keep like pushing you in this direction is because people don't know what the fuck a life coach is, right?
Yeah.
It's like, life coach, that's bullshit. That's a waste of money, you know?
Yeah.
So they have a lot of value, I believe, because I you know, have my own like perspective from it. But from other people, they're like, what is that worth? I can go to therapy. My insurance pays for therapy. But it's like, it's nothing like the mentorship that you're going to get from someone that's actually helping you achieve something.
Yeah.
Towards like getting over something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, a short definition of life coaching is it's making a game plan for the rest of your life. Like a coach, that's what a life coach is. And it's breaking down really broad goals, like I want to feel good, into small little steps that if you keep doing them week after week after week, I have a 3-month program, you will at the end of 3 months feel so different. Rather than just thinking I want to feel good for 3 months, you will take steps to it. And it could be actually bringing you things more than just feeling good. Let's say you're on OnlyFans. Let's say you're in West Hollywood a lot and you're holding yourself back because you don't want to be your full self. You feel like being silly on camera will lose you views. Mm-hmm. You feel like doing this one thing is too out there. But what if having a life coach teaching you to be more authentic, to be more you, gets you to do that thing that no one else does on video, that you originally thought was silly and weird, but people are like, oh my God, this is why I pick your videos over everyone else's, because I could tell you are really into it, you're really fun, or you do this thing that everyone else I'm sure is too scared to do. So that's a real life example how being authentic and open with yourself and being more positive and less afraid of your thoughts and what other people think, getting past that could actually help you in many ways, not just socially but financially. It could help you when you wake up in the mirror, look in the mirror and stuff like that. So there's a lot of benefits to it. There are coaches for different purposes too. I talk about mindset a lot.
What a great example. I'm thinking particularly about the OnlyFans situation as like, you know, being more sure of your characteristics of your personality. And there, you know, could be risks there, you know, and say that that person did move in that avenue. They potentially could lose followers, you know, right? And that downfall is going to maybe potentially put them in that immediate regret mode and try to retract. And I think that's what, like, the benefit of having a life coach or a mentor in your life could help you on, like, just stay full, right? Just keep mm-hmm. keep your pace, and you'll lose some people, but you'll gain some people, and you might do an even better, you know? But that's the hard part, and it's really, really hard to do on your own, so definitely consult with people, you know? Yeah. And it's really hard to do with your friends because they're so biased, mm-hmm. you know? And that's why I like working with the, you know, the outside perspectives.
Yeah, it is true. When you're making a change in your life, like me making a change with new friends, I had to cut off some old friends, have some empty space, have some doubt, think, did I do the right thing? Will I make new friends? And as I stuck to it, after a few weeks or a month, I started making new friends. I started getting invited to new things. I started personally reaching out to other people that I felt too scared to reach out to before because I thought they were too cool for me. And now I'm hanging out with a bunch of new people. Same with social media, whether it's OnlyFans or starting a new business online. You might have some downtime when you're changing your niche or changing your vibe. But if you're an OnlyFans guy who just looks at the camera and goes, oh yeah, sure. When you start to joke around and talk more and smile on camera, you might get some people being like, this is weird. This isn't as primal. But you might also, over time, when people find that new content, get people to be like, oh my God, you look like you're actually having fun. I could mm-hmm. really imagine being there with you because you're laughing and smiling. And oh my God, I just want every part of you and me. You just have to deal with that midway when people don't realize the new you yet. Just stick to it. So I'm glad you said that, Maticus.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great, Kevin. Like, I think some of the, OF content creators I talk about that. Some of the ones that do the best, it's about their individuality. And they're like, I just, like, was myself, and I've always been myself. And that's been the best part of how I've been to be able to succeed and talk to my fans and share experiences compared to people that are very, like, you know, buy the book and just trying to create content and really don't have that connection. And mm-hmm. they're going to, you know, hit their peak on where they can go. But that's really great.
Yeah.
So we have our OnlyFans people. What other things do you like to work on with people? Let's plug your business a little more.
Yeah. Well, you know, as a life coach, as a gay life coach, I work with a range of topics. So whatever my clients want to talk about, we do. But I do kind of have a little template of the first 3 weeks we talk about habits and goals, because we can't really work on stuff if you have no good daily routine, your eating habits are trash, mm-hmm. your, you know, mental habits, your social habits are just not existent. We would first build a foundation. Then the 3 weeks after that, we talk about working on your self-esteem and defining it. So pretty much what I said earlier of what are the traits about yourself that you care most about? That's what we work on for 3 weeks. What do you care most about yourself? What lights you up more than just you have a big bulge or you have big pecs? And then the 3 weeks after that, we talk about relationships, platonic and romantic. Mm-hmm. So we'll get more into that. How do you get what you want out of these relationships? How could you evaluate the relationships you have? How could you find new ones? And then the last 3 weeks, mm-hmm. we talk about keeping it forward even when I'm not there to keep you accountable.
Yeah.
So it's pretty much how to work on creating your own accountability, mm-hmm. creating systems for you to keep it going. And if someone wants to work with me for another 3 months, I would be happy to. But my hope is in those 3 months, my clients feel almost like they graduated.
Yeah. So you think a realistic timeline for achievement would be 3 months or...
Yeah, depending average. On what their goal is, mm-hmm. if their goal is some type of change, whatever it is, 3 months is pretty good.
To set a good expectation.
Yeah, three months is pretty good. Whether it is even finding a relationship, not that it's mm-hmm. guaranteed. I never promise that. I don't talk about relationships a lot, but actually a lot of my clients within 3 months have a big relationship change.
Yeah.
Whether it's a breakup or finding a new relationship.
Once you're happier, you're more attractive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're more magnetic.
Yeah.
You attract what you are. Mm-hmm. So if you're toxic and you say the gay community is toxic and you hate them, well, guess what you're going to attract? That.
You become your parents. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. Your gay parents.
Yeah, your gay parents. Yeah. I've always seen people that hated their parents. They become that sometimes, but... That's a whole nother subject.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So I think I was kind of like looking up over some of your plans and stuff. You have some like shorter ones to help people get over like that life goal, which is really interesting. But I think like 3 months and longer, and like people have to really understand to set the expectation of how long it takes to make a change. Mm-hmm. And that things don't happen quickly. And especially like when you're the one looking at yourself every day in the mirror, like it's really hard to see those minute changes, mm-hmm. right? But people are going to around you will notice it,
yeah.
right? And that, so I almost like wonder, how do you help enforce or encourage your clients to keep going when they're like, it's been 2 weeks, it's been 3 weeks, I'm not seeing what I want. You're not doing your job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, thankfully, no one has said that to me before. But if they are not noticing the results yet, we would just look back on what are some non-visible changes. Do they feel different in the morning? Did they before, whenever they see a hot guy, did they feel jealous and anxious? Now I ask, how do you feel when you look at a hot guy? I pull up a picture of a hot guy. How do you feel right now? And then they'll say, oh, I'm attracted to him. I'm thinking of doing something with him.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. So you're not comparing yourself anymore. You're not jealous anymore. Nice. You're just turned on by him. That's so much better.
Yeah.
That's a more natural response. Good. And they might be like, oh my God, I didn't realize mm-hmm. that change has happened.
Yeah.
Or maybe they want to work on just not hating themselves. And then I'll say like, okay, describe yourself. How would you describe yourself? Yeah. They'll say something and I'll be like, okay, before you said stuff like, I'm ugly, no one likes me, I have no friends. Now you even said, I'm starting to work on friendships. You know, I think some people might like me, some people might not. Even that, that's progress right there. In the span of 2 weeks, that's right. progress.
So you think another benefit of working with a life coach probably to be like that, even if you're not journaling, your life coach is documenting you. So they can, you know, give you those perspectives at a later point.
Yeah, I can give the other perspective to remind them mm-hmm. that, just like you said, they might be desensitized to the daily change in themselves, whether it's physical or mental, but I can show them after seeing them once a week, getting my first impression of them, I can show them these little things that an outside person notices.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I show them those little glimmers of hope, they could lean into it more. And they could focus on that more than just focus on this idea of who they think they are. They could remember like, oh, this is a cheerleader in my corner. This is someone who is telling yeah. me changes that are happening that I might be blocking out. Mm-hmm. I might be unconsciously ignoring the positive and focusing on the negative.
So, yeah. Okay. So I mean, that's really great. Thank you, Kevin. Have you ever had a time where a client is turned against you and has just completely disagreed with you?
You know, with the action step, at the end of each call, we make an action step of saying, okay, you want to feel good. What is an action that'll get you closer to that?
Mm-hmm.
And I ask the client that. I say, what is an action that'll get you closer to your goal?
Mm-hmm.
I don't say, you know what you should do? You should go to the gym.
Right.
So since I have them make their step,
yeah,
I haven't had someone like turn on me.
Right.
They do sometimes say like, oh, this didn't work for me.
Gotcha.
But I just say, okay, well, let's think of what is a next step. Like mm-hmm. this is a step you thought of. What did you imagine would happen?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I imagined this would happen. Okay. That's more specifically what you wanted. You didn't just mm-hmm. want to feel good. You wanted to feel good when you wake up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So what's a way you could feel good when you wake up in the morning? Maybe I could like have my clothes picked out for the next day. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Let's start doing that.
Right. So I think, that's awesome too. You're really helping them make the decisions on their own. So they're holding themselves accountable.
Yeah.
You know, it would be easier. But then other parts that I think of is like, you know, maybe where was there a time that like you've been wrong, but also thinking of like all the knowledge you have for, you're working for such a large group of clients and learning continuously. But there still had to be a time. Like, has there been a time that you've been wrong and you've had to learn from that?
You know, when I ask what step they could do,
mm-hmm.
I always have a step in mind. And probably, you know, more than half the time I'm correct, but because it's the step they say as well.
Right.
But sometimes they say something that is not at all what I thought of.
Gotcha.
And I'll just let them ride with it.
Mm-hmm.
I might say, oh, that's interesting you thought of that. You know, I was thinking this step, mm-hmm. but if that's what you think, then let's lean right. towards it. There have been a few times that I've said, you should do this.
Yeah.
And then they write it down. I notice most of the time when I say, you should do this,
mm-hmm.
they end up not doing it.
Yeah.
Or they kind of do it half-heartedly.
Got it.
So pretty quickly, I learned to not do that.
Yeah.
And when, yeah. So I guess when I'm wrong, I think the thing, and I might be wrong with what I think,
right.
but thankfully I try to get the client to lead their own way. Mm-hmm. And I'll kind of guide them. Maybe if they say like, oh, my step is, my action is I want to get close to this guy I'm dating. Mm-hmm. I should text him 5 times a day. I might say, let's reframe that.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's what you used to do.
Yep.
How will it be different this time?
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, that doesn't really happen too often. With all the clients I've had, I don't have someone who's like totally delusional. Because usually...
Not yet.
If someone... If someone is going to life coaching, most likely they've already had outside support before. Mm-hmm. It's rare for someone's first outside experience, whether it's therapy or support groups, it's rare for life coaching to be the absolute first self-help step of their journey. But yeah, if I have had some clients who sometimes do say something like, I should text this guy 5 times a day, and I'll be like, let's not do that. Let's that really doesn't happen often, but mm-hmm. if something like that happens, I'll just be like, okay, I'm gonna really step in here and say, don't.
Do you work in collaboration with like other service partners if someone needs to go in a different direction than they thought?
If someone has like, if I feel like there's a lot of unhealed trauma and they need a therapist,
mm-hmm.
I could refer them to someone.
Yeah.
And if I do feel like there are other services, because once again, I would like to work with them for 3 months. If they want to work with me more, that is their choice. But my hope is they graduate. They feel set. So I also want to refer them to resources like the LGBT centers or mm-hmm. other places where they could either find social support, they could find, you know, health support and whatever they're looking for. So often I will refer them if they want like more friends and social situations, I'll refer them to the LGBT center. I haven't had any clients so far that I've been like, you know what, you are not, life coaching will not work for you. You are just messed up. I've not had that.
Yeah.
I have had some clients that it took longer than I thought mm-hmm. to get them what they want. And it maybe took a little more working together and trying to understand each other. But I haven't had anyone that I've been like, you know what, we need to end our relationship together. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe a compliment. Like, let's add another service. But yeah. I think I could see people getting concerned with, you know, life coaching is typically private pay, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not covered by insurance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, compared to, you know, insurance might cover some different types of therapy.
Yeah.
Depending on what your coverage is like, I guess. So I'd wonder, like, okay, like, is he just going this direction to continue taking me for my money? But it sounds like you have the value there to make sure that they're, you know, utilizing the correct service.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, plenty of my clients do continue,
mm-hmm.
but I never try to be like, hey, you want to sign up? And even on my social media where I market myself, I'll never, like, cold DM someone being like, hey, do you want to sign up with me? You comment on my stuff. I would never I don't need to do that. I don't want to do that. I would never do that.
Yeah.
The only times I do that is if someone is trying to message me and hit on me constantly, then I'll be like, hey, you message me a lot. Are you interested in life coaching? Here's the price. Because I don't need someone to be talking about how they want to see me shirtless or they mm-hmm. want to see my big nipples. Like, that's not what I'm here for.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
That's good redirect.
Yeah.
I got something to sell you, but it's different than what you wanted.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, if you want to talk to me constantly, you can pay me.
I'm going to teach you how to talk to other people.
Yeah, exactly. I could teach you how to actually get what you want.
That's great. That's great. I think that happens a lot on social media, though. Do you incur that a lot?
Yeah, I'm sure you do, too. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm very open on my social media, and I even call my broadcast channel my inner circle.
Mm-hmm.
I talk about friends a lot. So it's understandable that people would think we're friends. Parasocial relationships, that's what it's called. They think that we're friends because I'm very gregarious online. I smile a lot. But I am here for my business. So comments I respond to every time. Messages and DMs. Unless it says I'm ready, which is my key word, I always say message I'm ready for more info about life coaching. If they say anything other than I'm ready, I probably will just delete the message. If they say, hey, I really want to talk to you. Hey, I have this problem with a gay friend. Hey, you're hot. I will delete the message. That's not what I'm here for.
Yeah.
If they say I'm ready, I will respond.
Yeah.
Or if they say I want to start life coaching, I will respond.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have the time.
Yeah,
I frankly don't have the time to respond to all these people that are sending me funny videos or sending me nudes or asking mm-hmm. me for nudes. I truly do not have the time. If I had the time, I would do it, but I don't.
I don't know if I'd do it even if I had the time, honestly.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm going to be honest, for those guys that are listening that send those types of messages, it's not happening.
Yeah.
You need to work with somebody about that.
Yeah. they're reaching in the wrong place.
So as we begin to close here, like, let's talk about you a little bit. So like, what got you into life coaching? Like, what, you know, like you said, you were a third grade teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what was the change?
Well, I have always wanted to work with the gay community. Like, I really enjoy the gay community. Mm-hmm. My life changed when I started to make gay friends many, many years ago. And I've always wanted to be some kind of like therapist. I used to lead support groups for anxiety and depression. I was in therapy myself as well.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I would go out to bars and parties,
right.
In LA, I'd be talking to some of the most gorgeous, most attractive, most socially up there, mm-hmm. richest guys, but they don't feel good about themselves.
Absolutely, yeah.
And here I am being, you know, pretty good, you know, but I'm not peak of pinnacle beauty, but I feel great, you know. And it always makes me so sad. I want them to feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Them being hot and confident doesn't make me ugly.
Right.
I'm going to attract who I attract, and they're going to attract who they do. Mm-hmm. So I want everyone to understand that people admire them. That's why I say admire yourself socially, yeah. physically, and mentally. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what I want people to do. And after talking with these guys at bars, parties, random, because this is what I do all the time. I'm not much of a dancer. Even if I'm not sober, I'm usually in the corner or on the couch talking to some random person. And after talking with all these guys and kind of naturally life coaching them, like mm-hmm. for years before I even knew what life coaching was.
Yeah.
That's when I was like, you know what? I want to like do this for real. Like, yeah. I want to be able to help these gay guys, even when I'm not out at a bar. I want to be able to help them, like,
yeah.
you know, when they're at home, and pretty almost be like a therapist for gay guys. But of course, life coaching isn't therapy. And someone who's in the life, someone who goes to warehouse parties, someone who does a lot of gay shit.
Yeah.
I want them to know, like, they could be open. There's no taboos with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand the nuance. I understand yeah. how it's not that easy to just be like, don't hook up with your friends. You know, how it's, even though I say that, but how it's not that easy to just be like, feel better about yourself. Find better friends.
Yeah.
I understand how it is to be in this world. And that's what makes me want to help people in this world is
yeah
my real conversations with people is what inspired me to be a life coach.
You're like, I can turn this into something, right?
Yeah,
yeah. That's awesome. Like, I feel like people definitely run into that where they want to have sex with their friends because maybe they don't know how to be friends is a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've definitely seen people in the club, especially it's the most beautiful men always,
yeah,
or are very attractive, and people like of all sorts are going through something and they just need that cheerleader. Mm-hmm. You're right. And, you know, your friends think that they're there a lot, but they're like, oh, I don't know, you're in the middle of it, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's good to have that outside perspective. So that's really cool that you're doing that.
Yeah.
I see myself trying to cheer people on that I don't know that well all the time. I'm like, I could do this for a job, you know. But yeah. that's stressful. So, you know, cheers to you, bro.
Yeah. And I also want people to know, like, you know, I am an example of how I want people to feel.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not the best looking guy in the world. I'm pretty good looking, you know. But I'm not the best looking guy in the world. I'm not the richest. I'm not the tallest. I don't have the most amazing, like, you know, socially up there friends in the world. I have amazing friends, but I don't have people that are like, you know, their name even before you meet them. But I feel great. I'm very happy. When I see a hot guy, I don't think, oh my God, I wish I looked like him. When I see a guy that is driving a Ferrari, I don't think, oh my God, I'm shit. Yeah. I'm just like, oh, cool. And yeah. other people can feel that too.
Yeah. Well, we are an attractive guy, and you're a great storyteller and a great mentor. So I think it's really important. And all those people that maybe that you compare yourself against to all need something from you, right? So I think it's the same with everyone, in that you're friends with somebody. Why you're friends with them? It's you want something that they have,
mm-hmm.
typically.
Yeah.
Right?
Or they might relate to you. They
right.
might bring out a part of you mm-hmm. that you really enjoy.
Yeah, that too. He's more positive than I am. But that's really great. So, okay. So, how did you get into education? You, like, did you do anything before that?
You mean as a third grade teacher?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I had a sales job before, which I just hated. I had another education job, which is like private tutoring, mm-hmm. pretty much. And I did a few other, I actually worked with like security a bit. I had random mm-hmm. stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I for education, I wanted to be able to like change the world with the children, because the children are our future. But nowadays, this is a whole different topic, but nowadays being a teacher feels more like a jail warden than a teacher.
Yeah.
I, as a third grade teacher, I was not focusing on the teaching. Like I was focused on breaking up fights. Maybe it's because I was in the middle of Hollywood too, mm-hmm. which it's actually not a very nice place sometimes, but I was breaking up fights in the middle of class between 8-year-olds, fist fights. I was trying to, let's just change the topic.
Yeah,
honestly.
Yeah, of course, yeah. But I think with all of that, you know, like it sounds like you wanted to be an educator and, you know, you did your sales training, security, all those different things have done great to manufacture the person that you are today. So I like to look back on those things that people are like, oh, I did all these things and they didn't matter. And I was like, I'm pretty sure they did. Yeah. You know, play a key factor in helping you connect with people now.
Yeah. Everything does mm-hmm. play a little part.
Yeah.
But I think for me, when it comes to life coaching, the biggest stuff is actually more of just my social life.
Yeah.
That more than my previous job experience. Mm-hmm. Of course, being a third grade teacher really helps me break down steps.
Yeah.
But my social life is what shows me there are a million perspectives out there. And even if someone thinks that one trait about them is bad, I know a million people that think that trait is good. You know, after talking with so many different people, I've been able to break a lot of rigid ideas I had.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm able to go and share with other people like, no, I know plenty of people that think this. And they might be like, oh, I never thought of it that way. Like an mm-hmm. easy example is Pedro Pascal. He's a hot daddy now. Before, some people might be like, oh, I have his body. It doesn't look good. I'm overweight. But now people are starting to understand we don't have to stick to rigid ideas. Bears are hot. Daddies are hot. Even if they don't do steroids, they could be hot. And with plenty of people, whether they're clients or guys at a bar or friends, I'm able to be like, no, your idea that this is bad about you, plenty of people would not agree with that idea that it's bad.
Yeah, I agree. Well, that's great. So ultimately, in closing, there's anything you think is wrong. No, I'm just kidding.
You gotta
be positive. Gotta be positive. You gotta be your own cheerleader first. But if you can afford to have a cheerleader, talk to my boy Kevin over here. And Kevin, close us out. Tell us how to get in touch with you if they're interested in your services.
Yeah. So I post almost every day on Instagram. Kevin Kassir is that, KevinKassir. I'm Iraqi, so that's where it comes from. And you can message me and say, I'm ready. You could also check my website, which is on there, to see more info. But I offer a 3-month one-on-one coaching over Zoom. So you don't have to be in LA to work together. And it would be over Zoom. So even if you're in LA, we will work over Zoom. We're not going to my room and doing live coaching on my bed. Instagram, Kevin Kassir. Message me and say, I'm ready. Even if you don't want to work with me one-on-one, you're welcome to just see what I post each day. And as I mentioned, I will never message you and say, hey, you just followed me. Do you want to pay me thousands of dollars? I will let you take that upon yourself if you are very interested. I don't need to be doing that.
Yeah, definitely a great positive page to follow, even if you're not going to use, you know, the services. So.
Yeah.
But, you know, thank you, Kevin, so much for sharing with us. Really appreciate it. It's been a great time getting to know you and understand a little bit more about life coaching.
Yeah.
And I hope that if you guys do need a life coach, you reach out to Kevin or another life coach available.
Thank you. It was great to talk with you, Maticus. I'm sure I'll see you around LA more.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Thank you.